Radio St. Pete insider correspondent Jordan Kalajian has the scoop on a fascinating new exhibition at the fairgrounds. She caught up with Devin Brady, a local hero who is a Hillsborough County fire captain, artist, and a magician, seamlessly balancing his duties as a firefighter with a keen interest in art and sculpture. Devin finds fulfillment from both his station and his art studio. Devin recently debuted his epic multimedia exhibit, The Bait Ball, at Florida's only immersive art and tech attraction, Fairgrounds St. Pete. With the need for a greater emphasis on improving mental health among first responders, the museum and Devin now hope to encourage other heroes to immerse themselves in cultural experiences and discover the therapeutic benefits of art right in their own community.
If you're wondering where that spooky noise came from, ask no further. That was a portion of the audio that plays during an immersive exhibit called The Bait Ball by Devin Brady at the Fairgrounds in St. Pete. Now, let's dive into the details behind the making of this piece, where the mesmerizing movement of mullet will have you swimming back for more. My first question is, what was the inspiration behind the Bait Ball immersive art exhibit?
The primary inspiration for the Bait Ball was my interest in the underground aquifer in Florida, some of the kind of hidden aspects of Florida that aren't as publicized. You know, I grew up in Florida, and to me, the interior of Florida was always my favorite part. You know, I'm not as much of a beach lover as other people may be, but I love the freshwater springs and the caves and all of that kind of interior Florida. Aquifer and the exploration of those things was always interesting to me, because it was kind of things that were done by a kind of ragtag group of volunteers and people that were having to scrape together funding for these efforts that did like the mapping of the caves at Wakulla Springs and areas like that. These weren't like big government funded efforts. They were just, you know, groups of people that had an interest in it, kind of doing things on their own. So I kind of started from that, and then was thinking about the mullet and the role that the mullet plays in Florida's ecosystem. It's kind of a linchpin or keystone animal that you can kind of measure the health of the Gulf ecosystem by the health of the mullet population, because a lot of the other animals, birds, and larger fish and stuff feed on the mullet, especially the finger mullet. So when you have a healthy estuary system where you know young mullet can grow, that feeds the rest of the ecosystem in Florida. Because mullet is one of these things that, like, Floridians have eaten mullet for a long time. It was part of indigenous people's food sources, but it's the kind of thing that was kind of looked down upon as like a lesser fish tourists didn't really eat mullet. It wasn't a thing that was on the menu in outside of Florida. So I thought it was kind of a cool, like, working man's kind of fish, you know? So was looking at that and looking at schools of mullet and schools of other fish and how they moved and how they would kind of form these balls to, in the presence of predators, the fish kind of ball up and create this circulating pattern that kind of moves them, keeps moving them from the outside to the inside of the ball so that everybody sort of shares the role of being exposed to the predator, you know, but they're kind of protecting the herd as much as possible. So I was looking at that and how that kind of related to other animals and how they move in similar formations, everything from like birds, flocks of birds, to like human mosh pits. I was looking at, like, you know, how people move in mosh pits being very similar to how fish move in a bait ball, or how, you know, stampedes of wildebeests in Africa move in, you know, in similar patterns. So I was kind of exploring the math behind that and what drives that, the geometry. And from kind of a narrative sense, I was interested in that idea of like sacred geometry. And it's always been kind of interest to me, because I think people that are interested in things like sacred geometry would say that there are these rules that are governing the universe, and that the universe, you know, stays within these set limits. That's not really how I see it as being, you know, coming from the other direction, that the rules happen to work because it's what works best for nature. And it's what, you know, the math is what explains the nature. It's not the other way around, you know. But what I started finding was that when I started laying out this animation, what I wanted was to create this 3D animation that would have this circulation pattern where the fish would come up from the bottom of the ball and swim over the top and come back out the bottom. And so in order for that to work, I needed to have this constant movement, and I couldn't have one fish landing on top of another fish. That was the main problem that I was trying to solve, was like, I want constant movement, but I don't ever want anything conflicting with
anything,
another
to clash
thing.
With each other or anything.
And
like that.
So what I found in working with those numbers was that really the only thing that works is all of the sacred geometry numbers. Like, it's all got to be prime numbers, Fibonacci numbers. So like there's 13 fish in the animation. So there's 254 fish on the ball, but they're in sequences of 1 through 13. 13 is a prime number. It's also a Fibonacci number. There's 41 ribs on the ball itself, which is a prime number. All of these numbers end up working out that way because what you want is for nothing to be divisible by anything else. Because if it's divisible by something else, then you have that chance of it. If you cut it in half, you have one thing landing on top of another. So everything works, and then all of the angles that the fish move at in their procession around the ball are all Fibonacci angles. I think it's like, I can't remember now, 137 and a half degrees or whatever.
Yeah.
But all of that stuff is tied into, you know, sacred geometry. The golden rectangle is just another function of, the golden rectangle is a Fibonacci sequence.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to calculate all of that?
A long time. it was about... Well, the whole design process was like about a 2-year process.
Yeah, because I saw the 3D printer alone took 2.5 months, you said?
Yeah, yeah. If I was a mathematician, I probably could have done this all a lot faster. But my way of doing it was like Excel spreadsheet, you know, running certain sets of parameters. So like there's a whole bunch of parameters that all have to come together. Like for the illusion to work, the frame rate has to be somewhere between 10 and 24 frames a second. That's what will fool your eye into thinking that it's seeing motion. That's what, you know, film strips or movies run at between 18 and 24 frames a second to create that illusion. I don't know if other people have looked at these things, or I've never been taught this stuff. It's just a kind of a process of discovery. So
yeah, you kind of learn as you go.
Yeah. And you kind of make, you know, or what I do is I make models and I test them out. Sometimes it's just doing an animation on a computer. Sometimes it's actually printing it out, putting it on a record player and hitting it with a strobe light so I can see if the effect really works. So this is what you would call a persistence of vision illusion. Your eye holds on to the last image and stitches it to the next image, right? And that happens somewhere in that frame rate between 10 and 24 frames a second. But no matter what I did, you would only see one illusion at a time. Either you would see them radiating out from the center as if they were, you know, marching out from the center, or you would see them growing as an illusion, but you wouldn't see both illusions at one time. And you can kind of do it with this bait ball, like when it's slowing down, if you if you just kind of zone out and look at it, you see this blur of fish, but you can also kind of try to follow them around, like look at one fish and follow it, you know, but you can't do both at one time. So that was really interesting. It's just like, I don't even know how much it applied to this particular thing. It was like, here's a discovery that I don't know if anybody's made it or even if it is useful to anybody, but it's just something about human perception that's interesting. And those are the kinds of things to me that, like, I'll probably use that somewhere else, that, you know, here's a little glitch that I've come across in how we perceive motion. And then that'll be fodder for me to exploit later on. Cause that's kind of what I'd like to tell people, is that my work always starts from a question. I don't feel like I'm the kind of artist that has like a grand statement to make, you know. I love work that's like that, but it's not me, you know. Mm-hmm. I have my own, you know, deeply held political beliefs and stuff, but I never consider putting that in my artwork. I'm almost 50 years old. I don't have a tattoo. I don't have a bumper sticker on my car. Like, I'm just not like a declarative statement kind of person. I'm about questions, you know? So when I see something that I don't understand or intrigues me, that's what gets me, you know, diving into it and exploiting it. And then what I love to see is that if I was able to really hit on that illusion, I can bring it to light for the viewer and I can have them see it and then understand, or at least begin to understand how the trick works.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, it you helps know? You to grasp the concept. And
right.
Art is always evolving, and I think that's like one of my favorite parts, mm-hmm. is that, especially with all the technology that we have.
I've always been a fan of work, and in my own work, I love to use whatever technology is available to bring the work to fruition. But in the end, I want my work to be physical, tangible, in the space. You can see it, you can hear it, you can move around it in 360 degrees. You know, in my work, a lot of times there's some kind of a digital component. There's huge amounts of, you know, 3D design and stuff that goes into this stuff. But in the final iteration, I want my work to be an object, you know, that exists in the analog world.
You know, it's not a magic trick. You want people to understand how it works and
right.
what went into it and everything.
Yeah. To be able to investigate an art, that's what makes it, you know, when you go to see a Van Gogh in a museum, if all you've ever done is seen slides in your art history class, you go, oh my God, there's so much more to this, because mm-hmm. all I've ever seen before is that one 2D representation. And now I can walk up to it and I can investigate and I can see it from different angles and different levels of magnification. And, you know, the depth is infinite, because I don't want the work to feel like it's this technical thing in the end. You know, mm-hmm. I want it to feel organic. That's what I love about this work, is that it's, I like to think it's visually engaging it like this. You know, people can be interested in what's going on there, but once it fires up, there's something else that happens that's like, one, unexpected, and two, like really like something that most people have never seen before.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I wanted to ask, do you have any future developments or plans for this installation, or like any other installations that you're currently working on?
I'm always working on things here or there. This installation is, it's going to stay here. We'll probably continue to make some tweaks to the light, the sound, you know, just to really get everything dialed in. It's a big, complicated thing with a bunch of moving parts to it. So, and this is a new environment for it. So we're still kind of like making some of those adjustments.
Yeah, working out the kinks and
everything. Yeah. And then we may, you know, we may continue to kind of populate this undersea environment over time, or, you know, there's definitely room for other things to make entrances there for this particular piece. And then I've got my hands in 1,000 things at once usually. So right now I'm building a camper van and, and playing music and stuff, but that's, you know, I've always got something going on.
Yeah. I love that. Keeping busy. Mm-hmm. Let's see. What do you hope that visitors will experience or take away from this installation?
I think really what we talked about, that kind of sort of aha moment of seeing that something is not what you expected it to be, recognizing that that's somehow due to your perception of things that that you didn't necessarily account for. And then the last little conceptual leap is understanding what that is, and that there are gaps in your, you know, the larger message is like, oh, my view of the world is just my view of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, other people's view of the world is their view of the world. And we're all viewing it through this flawed lens.
Yeah. Everybody's mind works differently.
Right.
Yeah. It really opens your eyes.
And so there are these huge gaps in our perception that we kind of gloss over. And it works for us most of the time, you know, but when you start delving into it, you realize, oh, this is not me taking in factual information about the world. This is me stitching together my preconceived notions of the world into a vision of what I think things should be, you know? So that's kind of the larger message. And I think, like, you really see it with kids, you know, you'll see a kid look at it, investigate it for a minute, then it stops spinning and it slows down and they're like, wait a minute, you know, something happened there. And then you can kind of see the wheels turning in their head and they're like, oh, you know, we did a project on the Hillsborough River with New Orleans Airlift in 2016. And I built this big, crazy contraption that was a musical instrument. It ran on water from the river. The water from the river was pumped up by a bicycle-powered contraption that they use in Africa to draw water from wells. You know, it's like a rope with knots on it that's pulling the water up through a pipe. And then all of that is running this big, crazy musical instrument that we built. And there were a group of like young poets that had come through, these like 13, 14 year old kids that toured through to see what we were doing. And I was explaining this whole thing to them. And one of the kids is like, why would you do all this? You know? I said, well, just because you can, one.
Yeah, why not?
And because I wanted to see what would happen if I did, you know, like I wanted to see if I could do this and make it work, you know? And I could just see it in his head. He was like, whoa, like, we can do that, you know,
yeah.
Like not only can we, but we should, you know, that's like when we have questions about the world, like we can go into the shop and sit down and put something together to test our hypothesis and see if it.
Yeah. It's like science with the experiments we used to do in elementary school and middle school and high school, mm-hmm. where you just like, you get to choose your topic and then just dive right into it and find more out. And it's so interesting to see how the environment you're in and how it reacts to everything. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And I think when you make a genuine discovery, you know, like I was saying before, I don't think you can have two persistence of vision illusions happening at once. That's my own little discovery that I just made. I don't know if it's worth anything to anybody, but I don't think, you know, I read a lot. I've never seen anybody say that before, you know, mm-hmm. It's just something that I discovered. And I think like when you can get people working in that mindset, like if you make a connection somewhere and there's probably some truth to it somewhere, you know, why do Mexican conjunto bands sound like they're playing polka music? Mm-hmm. Well, turns out, you know, there were a bunch of German settlers that had tubas in Texas and these things came together. Why does Appalachian music sound like Scottish music? Well, those people were, you know, like, mm-hmm. and so if you view the world in that way and you can like start making those connections for yourself, you go like, wow, I've noticed this similarity between these two things that don't seem to be related in any way. I'll bet there's a tie there. Let me go investigate and see what I can find out, you know? And then what's really cool is when you're the first one, nobody else has ever asked that question before, you know, and then you can show other people this, you know, discovery that you've made.
Yeah. All right. I've just got one last final question for you. It's kind of a fun one. If your art could speak, what would it say?
I think we already said like it would just ask you questions, you know, it would ask you like weird, nerdy, esoteric questions, you know, that may only be of interest to a few, you know, a select
group.
People. Right. But I mean, that's just how my brain works. I love more than anything hearing people talk about their weird little obsessions. Even if I have no interest in it myself.
Yeah, you just love learning more about it.
Yeah. If you're a cave diver, like I want to hear all about it.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm probably never going to go cave diving. You know? and I might never think about it again. But like, but if I meet somebody who's really into something like that, I want to know, you know, their experience of it, because that's like, you know, that's how I want to take in the world. I want to be exposed to things that I haven't been exposed to.
Yeah, things that you wouldn't expose yourself to, mm-hmm. but you can kind of get that experience, what's it, vicariously through another person?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, guys. That was awesome.
Our thanks to Devin Brady and Radio St. Pete correspondent Jordan Kalajian. To learn more about the fairgrounds at downtown St. Pete and this exhibit, visit their website at fairgrounds.art. The Fairgrounds St. Pete is located just 5 minutes from Tropicana Field in the heart of the Warehouse Arts District, along the Pinellas Bike Trail at 2606 Fairfield Avenue South.